Welcome back to TRP.
Hi, and a very warm welcome back to the Rosslare podcast. Today I have the pleasure of speaking to one of Wexford's most endearing sons, the historian, lecturer, playwright, newspaper columnist, and author of 24, soon to be 25 books. Who am I talking about, you might well ask? Well, I'm talking about the inimitable Nicky Furlong. I'd like to welcome Nicky Furlong to the Rosslare podcast. So, Nicky, can I first inquire as to where you were born?
Well, I was born in Wexford Town, North Main Street, in 1929.
Was your father a farmer?
Not until 1943. He was a shopkeeper, groceries, and alcohol.
So you were reared in a pub?
Yes.
On the main street in Wexford?
Yeah.
And how did you feel about leaving the family pub and going to a farm?
Well, it was part of the family. The farm was my grandfather, and my father took it over after his death. And I was therefore immediately, it seemed to me as if I was being pointed right straight in agriculture and farming. I would say in the 1940s the word was farming. They mightn't even have described agriculture as it being an activity to till the soil.
And were you not tempted to go and work in the pub and stay in the pub?
No, never. And I was kept away from it, because I believe that a granduncle of mine, Patrick Furlong, died from alcoholic poisoning. He took over the shop and he just drank it instead of making money from it.
What would be your earliest memories?
My earliest memories are when the circus came to Wexford. And the parade was along Wexford Town from north to south. And I was at the window over my father's premises, and I was looking down, and I believe I declared it. As a matter of fact, I remember, "Look at the big bullisters." The elephants, that was my definition of the elephants.
A bullister?
A bullister.
Is that a real word?
Not at all. It's a child's, an infant's. I must have been only three.
And in terms of schooling, where did you go to school?
Well, I went to the Presentation Convent first, because my aunt was a member of that congregation in Drogheda. And then I went to the Christian Brothers schools in George Street. And after that, I went to what is always known as the Boker, which used to be called the Boer, because it was the main Boer into Wexford Town itself.
You subsequently ended up going to an agricultural school in Warrenstown, is that right?
That's right. I won a scholarship, yeah.
But that wasn't normal for a farmer to go to an agricultural school, was it? Most farmers didn't do that.
But the Department of Agriculture, County Wexford Department, and Michael Connolly seized upon the opportunity for young farmers' sons to be thoroughly educated in farm production. And I won a scholarship from St. Peter's College to the Salesian College in Warrenstown, County Meath, in 1946.
And did you want to go to that college?
I didn't. I was being pointed into farming all the time, that was my future, you know. No other future at all. But who was going to get the farm? I was the only survivor of a family of five, male survivor, on either side. It was an awful situation, of course, to be in. But I had to face the responsibility. And I took it on my shoulder and waltzed in the scholarship to the Salesian College in Warrenstown.
But did you feel when you were offered that scholarship that in actual fact it was a burden on you?
Not a burden, it was a triumph, because I hated the secondary education I was getting in St. Peter's College, because inside in my guts, I was a writer. And I was being doing Greek, Latin, all three, algebra, geometry, and history, and so on. Like, the only one I liked was Irish language and history. But the rest, it was like rain falling off a duck.
But Nicky, you tell me you wanted to be a writer. Well,
I didn't discover that for a long time. I didn't even realise that one could get paid for writing, until I met my lovely wife, Mairead.
And how did she bring you into writing, or into journalism?
Because for my letters to her, she knew that I was a writer. And I didn't know that she could be paid at that time for a writer. So two or three years, with her urging, I applied for a column in the People Group of Newspapers, Wexford, and I landed it, and it was humorous, because I'm humorsome in myself, my conduct and everything else like that. I'm a dangerously, I'm inclined to make a joke of so too much, almost.
Why did you use the name Pat O'Leary when you wrote?
Because there was a famous song whenever I was going to excursions on the train, even as far as New Ross, of course, because the club that I worshipped in my early years was the Young Irelands, a historic ancient club with one All-Ireland to its credit in senior football. And it was my area, and I loved that, and that was steered me to forward.
I want to ask you about your family. How many siblings did you have?
Unfortunately, and this is the sad part of that decade, the 1930s. In any event, my family, my brother, whom I remember quite well, died in 1938, 3 days old. And the previous children that were lost, I believe, my mother told me, was four other, a girl, twins, and another boy, all passed out.
So you didn't really know them?
No, not at all. Oh. Not at all.
Oh, how sad.
And I was regarded as a precious, rescued from the deep type of thing.
So were you spoiled rotten then by your parents?
Absolutely. By my parents, yes. There's no doubt about it. And as the years wore on, I began to feel and see for myself that I was the only son in a farming family, in a shopkeeper family, in acreage. They had about 310 acres between the brothers and my uncle, my aunt, and my father.
It was a fine-sized farm.
Yes.
Big farm. I just want to get onto how you actually became a journalist. Where did you meet your wife, Mairead?
I met my wife, my lovely Mairead, and it all happened by accident. In the Wexford Festival, I used to assist the ancient Dr. Haddon with the festival tours that went out every morning of the Wexford Festival, starting at 10 o'clock. And eventually I succeeded him. But anyhow, for to introduce myself to Mairead. Mairead was in a car with another girl, and there was a man alongside me as we drove out to the Sow River, which is a very, very rich with remains. And as we passed through or approached Castlebridge Village, this girl in the back of the car said, "Damn it, I've had no breakfast, you see." So whereupon I whipped the coat cloak around my shoulder and said, "I will rescue you, child." And I got out of the car, and in Castlebridge, I went into the supermarket and I got her a Kit Kat. That was the end of my life story, because we fell totally and completely extraordinarily strongly in love, you know, and couldn't be separated from one another. Then, of course, we got married in 1959.
Mm. But I want to ask the question, what was Mairead doing down in Wexford?
Well, she was a supervisor in Shannon Airport, and she had arranged to go to holidays to Paris with her friend, her pal. And the pal, for some reason or other, could not make the trip, so Mairead chose to come to the Wexford Opera Festival, which was very famous at that time, and still is, of course. Yeah.
But she must have been a very, very upmarket, classy woman to be going on holidays back then.
Oh, yes, she was. She was a supervisor, yeah.
So you met up, you got married. And did you have a family?
We had one pregnancy and we lost the child.
Ah, that's terrible. I'm going to ask you, Nicky, about your column. Was that the first writing you did?
Yes.
And that was for the Wexford People, wasn't
it? The Wexford People, the Pat O'Leary column. And nobody knew who Pat O'Leary was until somebody shouted, oh, there's Pat O'Leary, you know. So.
And why did you want to remain anonymous?
I thought, I wasn't at the time alert to the huge, massive, extraordinary demand for good writing and comic writing even particularly, you know. So that made me nervous. I wasn't sure of myself at that time. But, I mean, I remember what I managed to get a column on farming into the Free Press and on general affairs and humorous and fun in the People newspaper group. I was getting £2 a week from the Free Press, but I was getting £2.50 from the People newspaper as part of the Independent group.
You also wrote a piece for the... Was it the Sugar Factory? They had a magazine.
Oh, good Lord, yes. I was employed by the Sugar Company as their agent in the southeast of Wexford. And I enjoyed a tremendous relationship with the editor who has passed away. God love him. Anyhow, I contributed monthly to the Beatus magazine, which went free to everybody who had a Beat contract. That was the whole country covered, you know. And that's how I...
Was this after your Pat O'Leary time?
No, during.
It was during that time.
That's right, yeah. And I was doing the two of them there, the monthly Beatus and also the Progressive Farmer, in fact, and also a Pat O'Leary column, and the Free Press was... Pato was Jim O'Leary or something. So I've forgotten what I called myself. But why the hell I didn't write my own personal name at that time, I do not know. It's perhaps because I was very new to the profession, and I did not know what the ropes were at all.
So when are we talking about when you were doing the Pat O'Leary columns?
We're talking about 1964 to 1994.
So was Mairead aware at the time that you were writing these columns?
Not at all. She only told me that I should be paid for writing, or could be paid. She educated me, so to speak, in an extraordinary manner. And I said, paid to... I thought writing was fun, you know, and you didn't need to be paid for it. It was your own reward. But nevertheless, she told me, you will have to be, you're producing an awful lot of stuff. So I had to go to the editor, and we made a deal for £2.50 in the People group of newspapers, Pat O'Leary, which made my name, and the farming column in the Free Press was €2. £2, what am I talking about? And £2.50.
So Mairead was the one who actually put you on the road to making money from writing.
Exactamong.
Well done. You did work for television as well. You did some work for the Hawes Pictorial Weekly.
I did, yes, I did indeed. Yeah, that was terrific fun. The greatest fun of all time, and particularly it was went blown all over the country. Frank Hall, that was a brilliant programme. And I think he was so good as a cynic. He specialised in pulling, leg pulling, you know, which sometimes hurt. But in any event, he spotted me, and then I met him.
How did he spot you?
Because he used to look at the pick of the provincial papers, you see. And then we got together and he hired me. Anything that could turn up that you could get a leg pull out of, you know, from elections, from characters, you know, that he could make a fist of, but who would be recognised on in their own place or in their own territory, but not to, generally speaking.
I can remember Hall's Pictorial Weekly.
Yeah.
I love the show.
Yes.
I think it was the first programme that ever took the piss out of the Irish people.
That's correct. That is correct. He was a genius.
And what about The Late Late Show? What were you doing for that?
Oh, The Late Late Show, well, I was on it, first of all, when my first book was published. Dermot, King of Leinster and the Foreigners. It was a biography of Dermot MacMurrough. He was the King of Leinster,
yeah.
in effect.
You wrote for the Echo newspaper.
The Echo snatched me, as a matter of fact.
They were to say, Nicky, the Echo said that you were fearless, that you never pulled punches. You
That's
said it
right.
as you saw
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And your piece was Furlong at Large.
Yes.
Were you a feared writer at that stage? Did people, were they scared of you getting at them through the papers?
I don't think so, because I was very made very careful by the first editor that I ever worked under in the People newspapers of libel. I was made absolutely worried about that. And as a matter of fact, my column was halved in a case that could have been libelous. So that's the only, but that mended my manners, so to speak.
I want to ask you now, Nicky, about a production, Lunatic Fringe.
Yes.
Will you tell me about that and what caused all the fuss?
First of all, I was very careful to get permission off people so that there wouldn't be no upset. And the man, his name was Cosgrove, who was a best shooting friend of the Guardian in the Franciscan Friary, told me, of course, yes, go ahead. What the hell? I'm sure I'll make that okay with him, because I was going to introduce a mock friar as a character. Now, why did I choose a mock friar? Because my father was a member of the Third Order, the civic branch, you know, and had his Franciscan habit up in his dressing room, you know. And I used that, took that, stole it, of course, on my father. And that was why I brought in the mad cleric of a Franciscan. Because I had the Third Order abbot.
But you weren't actually taking the piss out of the Franciscans. You were just taking...
Not at all.
Creating a character.
Not at all. It was a character, and he was only... And it turned out in the end of the play that he was a fraud.
And tell me, Nicky, because of the publicity, was it a big success, that?
It was a financial full out over the 6 days it were performed, yeah.
And was it performed anywhere outside Wexford?
No. the first experience I had of a theatre production directed by Tomás McKenna was Insurrection 1798. And I was able to use the whole theatre, back, front, fife and drum bands, real, genuine, artistic and creative material, but dependent on historical fact.
That was quite a strange thing to take on, and like you say...
Well, the most important thing about it was my selection of Tomás McKenna, and he did this magnificent operetta of, I think it was the Mikado, or I'm not quite certain now at the moment, but anyhow, one of them. And I was overwhelmed with the sagacity and the selection of taking in the full theatre. And that's what he did with me in Doonwira in Wexford. He included in the action the complete Doonwira Theatre, top, bottom, right, left.
Did you write this as a play? You sat down to write a play. Did you set off to write that play?
I didn't set off at all. I was given a contract by the Senior Chamber of Commerce to write a stage production. That was what I was told to do. I was only established as a writer in the People newspapers for about a year, you know. So anyhow, the Chamber of Commerce chose me to write a play about 1798. It was as vague as that. But thank God I'd already seen productions by Tomás McKenna, and I agreed to do the script for the 98, provided Tomás McKenna was the producer. And they agreed, and the next is a holy success.
And did you have any say in who played what parts?
No, Tomás had more or less that, and he knew some of them from the rural plays and things that he adjudicated on, you know. So he was terribly wise, very wise indeed, you know.
And would you say that was the stepping stone to becoming a well-known writer?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So that came before the Lunatic Fringe?
Yes.
Tell me about, is it Storming the Bastille?
Storming the Bastille was on the 200th anniversary of the French Revolution. And it was took place in the open air in the Market Square in Enniscorthy, with the help of Harry Ringwood, a brilliant producer himself, and his brother. And we had the pick of actors from all over County Wexford again. Because, you see, it was a Ferns man who started the charge on the Bastille in actual fact, you see, from Ferns County, Wexford. So, therefore, all I needed was to get one of our Wexford's best actors, Seamus Furlong, and he acted the part of the attack the Bastille, and he made a fiery speech written by myself, outside the Bastille to the what we produced was a mighty throng of those who were in revolt.
How do you hear the actor speaking in an outdoor setting like that?
Oh, well, I mean, the in those days, of course, whatever about Insurrection 98 and 1984 GAA, there was, you just have to use your voice. You have to throw your voice.
Project
and
your voice,
there
yeah.
I got picked so many outstanding rural actors, and they're there. They're still there. For example, the Drama Society nearest to me in Drina in the parish of Piercestown is a brilliant actor, and I've a cousin, an actor, who is outstanding as well.
You also did something commissioned by the GAA, the
yes.
Purple and Gold.
Yeah, that was 1984.
And
yeah.
What was that supposed to be?
It was to show the commemoration of the founding of, in 1884, of the Gaelic Athletic Association. And I was to produce not a documentary play, but I was to mix good humour and bad humour. So I was able to, I'm sure the sketch still exists in Wexford County Council Library or archives, you know. But it was a wonderful chance for me to take the leg pull out of GAA meetings, then accomplishments, then the record years, and then so on, you know. It was a stunning success.
I'm just going to talk very, very briefly about your books. You did County Wexford in the Rare Old Times.
Yes.
Could you tell me about that book?
Yeah. I just got the idea, and there was a man working in the People newspapers in the photographic department. His name was John Hayes, and he was interested in the earliest photographs, you see. And that interest, we both collided in interest at that time, you know. And therefore, most natural thing to do was to try and find the earliest photographs in the photographic era for County Wexford. And we did that, and I called it County Wexford in the Rare Owl Times, Owl apostrophe times. Eventually, I did five different County Wexfords, yeah.
Really? You also seem to be fixated with Father John Murphy from Boulevogue.
Yes. I mean, he has sung all over the world, even in Vancouver when I was out there. When Wexford won their last All-Ireland, the crowd in the hall where it was relayed to us broke into Boulevogue on the Pacific coast of North America. It was incredible. And I was there and with my sister, and the place went on fire practically.
Please tune in next week for the second part of this fascinating interview. Keep on listening to TRP.